This diagram here, the Venn of identity, has become quite famous over the past several years, and it's just one such example of multiple technologies, in this case, that are doing a terrific job in their own right within their own circle of the Venn diagram. However, the confusion arises when we try to figure out how these various technologies complement one another, how the intersection points of these technologies can provide migration paths for users who want to move from perhaps a less secure to a much more highly secure and highly authenticated environment with the trading partner, whomever that might be, in a social environment or business, as I previously mentioned. For instance, the Concordia project has been very focused on this. This diagram over the past several years has developed interop, has shown prototypes of these various protocols working with one another, and most importantly, I would say, has established a dialogue among the various communities for active and productive conversation to move this harmonization forward. So to carry this forward, several successful organizations are addressing discrete components of the identity model, the identity metasystem, the identity infrastructure. And each of these components, these associations, have been successful in their own right. They've produced good work. They have advanced the industry forward. But we see a need for continued work in this area, and continued work particularly in the case of both technology as well as business interoperability. And I'm going to turn over to my colleague Brett McDowell to walk you through a little bit more detail of what we mean by that and how these needs need to be addressed by a coming together of community. Brett?
Thank you, Roger. So interoperability. When we talk about interoperability, we're seeing it from two dimensions. One is the technical interoperability that you often see cited, and that really covers whether or not the different pieces that are connected to the network can actually talk with each other. Can my client application actually talk to the systems I use? Can the application that authenticates me or vouches for me at another service, can that interoperate with that service at all on a physical level? And then the second part of interoperability is the operational interoperability. And we get into a lot of policy issues here. So we're really looking at the world of interoperability at two layers, the technical layer and the policy layer. Identity assurance is a key language of policy for interoperability of federated identities, so you know how well you can trust the assertions that are being made. But also we have liability and privacy and other things that policies have to interoperate before we can really enable these systems. On the technical interoperability side, we've seen a lot of progress over a good number of years. Some examples here are the work that Liberty Alliance has done with SAML testing and some of the work that OSIS has done with OpenID and Information Card, more informal interop testing. So we've seen progression here, and we think that things can continue to progress, and that no matter what your needs are as a deployer, that there will be an appropriate level of due diligence on the interoperability of any implementation to meet your needs. So sometimes you just need to know that, you know, a couple of different implementers were able to make this work. So that's good enough for me. I'm going to spin it up and go live. Other times, it's like, no, I really need to know if this is going to absolutely work with everyone in my supply chain, and so I need a much higher bar due diligence, and I'm looking for some kind of certification mark I can put in my RFP. So no matter what your needs are, Kantar Initiative is looking to make sure that we're going to be able to help you meet those needs. And on the operational interoperability side, this slide here does capture a bit of the problem in the space. There are many different federations working with public key infrastructure or SAML infrastructure, and these organizations set up rules. Every single collection of trusted parties creates their own rule set and their own policy so that they can interoperate within their community. What we're seeing are large players with many hundreds of millions of users that see an opportunity to enable their user communities to participate in all kinds of different application communities. And therefore, they're looking for some high-level standard or sort of meta-level standard that we can get all the different communities of trust or federations to comply with. And so you can see several here, and then Liberty Alliance has done some work, some great work they inherited from the e-authentication program of the U.S. government and the electronic authentication partnership that they formed, and that is a good model, and we're encouraged to see Liberty Alliance bringing that work into Kantar Initiative soon. We are also advancing the identity industry through collaboration. And the key things here for collaboration is the industry recognizes that one size is not going to fit all, and to meet the needs of the community means meeting the needs of all the communities that rely upon identity. And without collaboration, interoperability at both the technical level, but especially at the policy level, is not going to occur, especially between very different application space, such as social networking, Web 2.0, and enterprise and government use cases. So we see the need for broad collaboration, and Kantar Initiative is a great forum for us to deliver that. And now I'd like to turn it over to Roger, and he can talk a bit about how Kantar Initiative was born.
It came out of about 18 months of very serious planning and strategic analysis of the state of the industry. We had a variety of associations, deployers of technology, implementers of technology, commercial and government deployers, I might add, coming together over the course of about 12 months very actively and determining what's the need and what is the potential best form for this association to undertake. So we came to the name of Kantara. Kantara means bridge. So it is a way of bridging these various initiatives, these various needs, both technical as well as business needs, and harmonizing these needs across the spectrum of requirements. Initiative, the word initiative, was deliberately chosen because it indicates motion. It indicates activity. This is not intended to be a passive group that is simply observing the passing tide of identity. This is a group that intends to be fully engaged and fully productive to meet the requirements that we are hearing from the various constituency. We had a soft launch for this activity at the RSA conference in April, quite successful, very positively received by the press and analysts. We had a so-called hard launch or a press release last week that was also very positively received by press and analysts around the world. Our founding principles for this organization, and this is really important, that we intend to be a transparent organization. And we have spent many long hours trying to figure out, we'll stay on this slide for just one more second. We have spent many long hours trying to figure out how we can be as open as possible, as inclusive as possible, so that this doesn't focus on just one constituency, like big vendors or big companies, but that it allows for innovation, collaboration, but yet at the same time provides the experience, the air cover, if you will, from people who know how to bring these great ideas to market. So we spent a good deal of time focused on these founding principles that are indicated on these slides, and everything we do to this point, I can say with quite candor and honesty that we have been focused on these founding principles and have been rigorously adhering to them. So our primary focus is to foster community harmonization, to figure out not the exclusion of technologies or the exclusion of solutions, but recognizing the legitimate place that these solutions have and figuring out ways that they can work together harmoniously through interoperability, through innovative solutions that a small group of people might have, a very creative way of solving a particular problem. We want to foster that. We want to provide, as I said, air cover and support for that so that it gets the visibility and it gets the potential broad adoption that it deserves. And reduce the political barriers or political wars that sometimes happen with entrenched opinions. So we are developing an open process so that technical straw man specifications can be developed within the organization with a target submission to a standards development organization, say OASIS or one of the ANSI accredited standards bodies. So we're not intending to be a standards body by any means, but we are intending to be an organization where folks can come together and specify the problem, identify potential solutions to that problem, and then turn that over into the appropriate standards bodies. Not just about technology, as Brett pointed out, but this is also about operational frameworks, educational programs to teach people how these various technologies and solutions can be deployed, and above all, privacy respecting. There was an article, a news article on the radio that I heard just this morning talking about the potential privacy breach that was being experienced by a company because of potential bankruptcy. What's going to happen to all of those records, which include biometrics, passports, driver's licenses, social security numbers, financial records, and so on? What are the best practices for protecting and managing that information? And that is also an area that we'll focus on. So the goals of the association and the initiative are to foster and accelerate market adoption, to show people how this can be successfully deployed and thereby accelerate the adoption. It's got to be holistic. It can't be just focused on one particular solution path. It's got to span the spectrum. It's got to be Kantara, spanning the spectrum of these various approaches. An open and democratic process, and we're going to talk in a little bit on how we practically achieve this. This is not a top-down organization where a few people have the veto authority, but it's much more consensus-driven and much more collaborative in the structure, and that was very deliberate and discussed long and hard to make sure that we got it right. But the operational structure that we are implementing is one that knows how to get things done, that knows how to nimbly bring solutions to market and foster that positive dialogue. I would say that over the past 12 or 18 months, the one lesson that I think we have all learned in this process is that you get pretty far along when you actually start having a dialogue with people, when you actually start sitting down together and understanding what your common goals and objectives are, and then the rest of it tend to fall by the wayside because your common goals provide the synergy, the drive, the desire to solve the peripheral issues that you may be encountering. So dialogue, harmonization, and collaboration, I would say, are the overriding principles of what we're attempting to accomplish. So to take you a little bit more deeply into the organization itself, I'm going to turn over to my peer colleague, Trent Adams, who is, as I mentioned before, the chair of the peer organization, the Leadership Council, the peer to the Board of Trustees. Trent?
Yeah, thank you, Roger. What's been really interesting about this process, you know, so far is seeing this all come together, and we've been working on it for, over a year or so, pulling the pieces together. And we really listened to a lot of input from a lot of different camps. And one of the keys was the development of a bicameral model. For those of you who don't walk around with a thesaurus in your head or a dictionary, a bicameral governance model is basically two houses that work together. And the piece that I spend my time working on and dealing with is the Leadership Council. And the Leadership Council is made up of representatives of all the groups
And these are both the work groups and discussion groups, and we'll talk more about what those are later. But basically, there's no pay to play. So you don't have to show up with your checkbook to be on the Leadership Council. What you do need to do is be a leader of one of the groups that is currently running. And so that's how you get into the Leadership Council. Basically, what the Leadership Council is doing is an oversight committee. It's a committee that is helping to move the work forward. They, in order to do so, they develop and maintain the operating procedures, approve and new and revised group charters. So somebody spins up a group, they get a group of people together, they decide they want to do something, spin it up, and the Leadership Council takes a look at the charters and makes sure that they adhere to the basic principles and basically approve them, make them active, and give them all the support that they need. And then, of course, there's the standard tussle that is, well, some of the groups need some cash. They maybe they're putting on an event, or maybe there's an outreach effort, maybe there's a code sprint. And the Leadership Council, one of the Leadership Council roles is to go to the our friend Roger and his group at the Board of Trustees and make sure that there's funding available for those activities. And then as the activities wind down and they spin the work out, the group helps, the Leadership Council helps certify that or helps the process of certification by an all-member ballot that the work product is official Kantara output. And then, of course, you know, this isn't going to happen without close collaboration with the Board of Trustees. So what we've done is we've cross-pollinated. We've received some folks from the Board of Trustees in the Leadership Council to provide liaison guidance, and then similarly, the Leadership Council has a couple of folks at the Board of Trustees. So, you know, a little bit more of the Board of Trustees is kind of the flip side of the Leadership Council, and this is the group that are the paying members. These are the people who are sponsoring the Kantara initiative, fortunately with their checkbooks, and this is how this work is actually moving forward. And really, their job is fiduciary in nature. And so we really make sure that they have all of the necessary input that they need from the Leadership Council side in order to make the decisions as to how to realistically budget, for the work product. And then, of course, their relationship is all in and around setting membership fees, making sure that parties, both big and small, have a seat around the table and can pay accordingly to have representation. And then, of course, the Leadership Council definitely needs advice and support, specifically as it relates to both legal and fiduciary issues. The Leadership Council is traditionally made up of people who are getting work done, and fortunately, we've got the Board of Trustees backing us up on all of the advisory kind of situations that we'd struggle with. And then, again, we've got the same cross-pollination leadership to Board of Trustees back and forth on that. And if you're on the next slide here, slide 14, you get to see all of the Board of Trustees logos there. You've got a smattering. You can all see them. AOL, BT, CA, Intel, Fidelity, Novell, Oracle, PayPal, Sun, NTT, NRI, and then the Internet Society. I work for the Internet Society as well, and also our representatives, the Leadership Council representatives, are representatives from Intel and New Zealand, the government of New Zealand, which is giving us a great representation into the Board of Trustees. Now, I mentioned earlier there are a couple of different work group types, or there's a couple of different group types. There's a work group and a discussion group. The work groups are the ones that are established primarily to create technical specification outputs, white papers, open source code, and things of this nature. While we're not working on technical specifications We're not a standard setting organization, so we want to make that clear. We're not authoring technical specifications and then hosting them and operating them. But instead, what we're doing is incubating them. We are harmonizing them, and we are then every work group, if it is going to be working on technical specifications, must identify charter. The standard setting organization that will pick up that output and operate it. So there's a lot of synergy that happens there on the back end as well. Any of the participants are full voting members, of the groups, and this doesn't necessarily mean whether or not they are a member in quotes as defined by the bylaws of the Kantara Initiative. So you could walk in and join a working group as a participant and be a full voting member of that work group. You do not need to be a member of the Kantara Initiative itself, hence the difference in terminology between participant and member. It's just kind of a simple way to keep clear who is falling into what camp. But again, you can just walk in off the street and join a work group. There's nothing that's a barrier to your participation. Work group output, of course, as I mentioned earlier, goes to the Leadership Council for review, and just making sure that it's all adhering to the charter. But then when it is ready for prime time, it goes to all of the members of the Kantara Initiative to vote on as official output, as a recommendation. And so that's it's important to note that the Leadership Council is not a gate on the on the work of the work groups. It's just in this case making sure that they've crossed their T's and dotted their I's before it goes out for a full vote by the membership. And then, as we mentioned before, the work group leaders have voting representation at the on the Leadership Council. Again, that's the work group leaders are who make up the Leadership Council, as well as the discussion group leaders. I don't want to leave those, the discussion groups out. So the difference now between a work group and a discussion group is that the discussion groups are a lot lighter in nature. They can be spun up much more quickly and easily. And really, the intent of a discussion group is to have rapid-fire discussions, kind of like at the IETF, a BOF, a bird of a feather kind of process. You can discuss all sorts of different topics, and then the output of those topics could go somewhere. They could be fed into a work group. In fact, we've already got a couple of groups, a work group and a discussion group, that started separately, that were spun up separately, and through the process, we've brought them together and synergized their process. In fact, we've sequenced their process such that the discussion group feeds into a different work group. So that's the differences between the work groups and discussion groups, and how they interplay. And currently, this is dynamic. I mean, literally, this is dynamic day to day, and it's hard to keep this up. So this is a mix now of proposed work group and discussion groups, and currently active work group and discussion groups. When this slide was formed, they were all proposed, but we are actually advancing the ball and moving things forward pretty quickly. So just some of the groups listed here. You'll probably spot a couple of these names from other places. Concordia is in the process. In fact, we have a call later this afternoon to talk through the process of the Concordia discussion group spinning up. We've got a consumer identity work group that's in process. It's been accepted as a charter, and it comes up for leadership approval within a couple of weeks. There's an e-government work group, healthcare identity assurance and accreditation. Again, many of these are familiar from other venues that have been brought in. There's a couple of interesting ones, the multi-party identity selection work group that was just passed and is now active and running. And there are a couple of others that have made their way through. In fact, the user-driven volunteered information policy discussion group is live and active, and the technology work group is in process. The Japan discussion group was activated, and Japan work group is in process. There are a couple more that don't make it onto the slide that have been proposed, and there are a number more that are being proposed and are various stages in the process. So hopefully that gives everyone a little bit of a visibility into the work that is going on today and our process. This is a visual, and this is, I think, my last slide before I turn it back over to Brett. But this is just a visual if you're curious about what a bicameral model looks like. So leadership councils there on your left, board of trustees over there on your right. And you'll see that there's many work groups and discussion groups as we can fit under that that little bullet there. We're co-equal, we're equals with the board of trustees. We've got a support staff, which actually is incredibly powerful. The resource allocation of the staffing and their responsiveness to supporting our work has been amazing to date. We're looking forward to it continuing, and it really does make the difference between a group of people who are in their garage who decide they want to put something together and you know roll up their sleeves and get the work done. There's a lot of mechanics that just have to go on to make things move smoothly, and the staff has been incredible in helping smooth out a lot of the rough edges and keep the work moving forward. There you go. There's a bit of how the system functions and what we are actually currently doing. And I think, Brett, you're going to pick it up from here and chat about membership types.
Sure. Thank you, Trent. So membership in Kintara Initiative is pretty simple. We have repeated over and over again, you do not need to be a member of the organization to be a full voting member of any of its initiatives, work group or discussion group. That's a very important takeaway for all of you today. If you do choose to become a member participant, then that gives you a vote on the final recommendation of the organization. After the work group has completed its work, it really, and I'm not talking about some kind of interim public review. We don't do an all-member ballot for an interim review. Everything is transparent. Everything's public 100% of the time. So the only time we go to an all-member vote is when something is really done, and it's going to become a Kintara Initiative recommendation. And if that recommendation is a technical specification, once it is approved, it is submitted to the standard-setting organization that was listed in the initial charter. So everyone knows what's going on. Everyone knows what's going to happen at the end. A lot of the policy standards will remain with the organization. But the technical specifications we're committed to putting into pre-existing standard-setting organizations. And then if you want to be a higher-level member, then you're a trustee. It just means that you have a seat on the Board of Trustees, and that is going to give you a vote in their meetings. But again, their meetings are open, public, and transparent. So you can join a Board of Trustee meeting, just as you can join any discussion group that you sign up for. If you join a Board of Trustee meeting or a Leadership Council meeting, you are not a member of the Leadership Council or a member of the Board of Trustees, then you're considered an observer for the meeting, and your questions or comments may very well be invited to the conversation, but it's going to be case-by-case basis. And it's at the will of the chair. That's how we wrote the bylaws, just so meetings didn't get overwhelmed. Clearly there's an intent there to include your participation time allowing. So those are the levels of membership. And here is our initial membership. So we launched this organization on April 20th at a conference. We didn't do any publicity for Kintara Initiative until last week. So between word of mouth and the good work of people who have been getting excited about Kintara Initiative, this is the membership that we've collected so far, and we're seeing membership agreements come in literally every day. And here we are talking again about some of the workflow. So one thing I want to emphasize that you might want to use your discussion group for is the incubation of a work group. Trent mentioned that it's lighter and easier to create a discussion group. I'm going to put a fine point on that. It means that you don't need a full charter. That's basically what it means. You don't need a full charter. and you don't need any members of the organization as co-sponsors. So it's very easy to create a discussion group, and there's no approval of the group. It just you send in a request, and your discussion group is formed. So you can do that if you have an idea, and you're new to the community, and you want to see if anyone else shares your idea or shares your pain point. Maybe you don't have the solution, you only have a requirement, and you want to see if there are people there who want to work with you on building a solution. I would say create a discussion group. We'll announce it to the full community. You can start attracting people to your discussions, and then if there is critical mass to do something and a clear scope of work is defined, then you work on a working group charter, which does go through an approval process with the leadership council. And one of the key things about Kantara Initiative work groups that is a bit unique in my experience anyway is that there are several different IPR policies that you can choose from. You choose the type of IPR policy that meets the needs for the work you're doing and the people who want to do the work. So there are several options to choose from, and that also makes a lot of things easier. From experience, I've been in organizations that had a very comprehensive single IPR policy, and even something that's fairly light and nimble, it doesn't need a ton of patent review, was subject to all that patent review, and it actually became a barrier to participation. So I'm really excited about this aspect of the Kantara Initiative process. And then things, you know, they complete their work, and the Leadership Council makes them inactive. Now I'm going to turn it over to Roger, who's going to talk from a member of the community perspective on the benefits here.
Thanks. And just before I touch on that in the few remaining slides that we have, I would remind you that we're going to have a Q&A session at the end of this, and you can either ask your questions by voice, or you can put them into the chat window and ask them that way, and we'll get them. So if you prefer the chat window, you can start typing away now. So there are basically two kinds of members with associated benefits in this initiative. The obvious kind are sort of individuals and companies, and I'll talk about those in a moment. But the perhaps little less obvious kind are existing initiatives. And one might ask, well, you know, why should my organization or my alliance associate itself with Kantara Initiative? And I think to a large measure that is answered by the need for harmonization. Our customers, those people who want to deploy these technologies, are interested in how these various technologies and approaches are going to work together. These deployers want solutions that are harmonized. The only way you can harmonize something is by having a dialogue. The only way you can have a dialogue is becoming actively engaged. And so we have made it very easy for other alliances, initiatives, collaborations to get together with us to move this forward. Now, in the case of a couple of initiatives, they have decided to fully merge within the Kantara Initiative and put their people and their resources, including financial, behind the organization and put their full weight into a common group to advance the cause. And in that case, those members were granted full reciprocal membership and recognition just as though they had joined Kantara from the outset. In another case, an initiative may simply want to become a member and thereby allow its members to spin up work groups, discussion groups, get initiatives going that are perhaps more properly done within the umbrella of Kantara. And then the final benefit that I would like to emphasize is that it's expensive to run initiatives and associations. And, you know, in these economic times, folks are having to make choices of where they want to put their dollars, where they want to make their investments. So it provides the opportunity for companies to make fewer investments, but have those investments leveraged against a much more synergistic environment where lots of smart people are already working on these problems, the processes are already in place to get the solutions out the door. So those are the primary benefits that we see for other initiatives that are thinking about joining. In the case of benefits to individual participants, I would say that the nature of the inclusive environment, the open environment that we have created here and that we are fostering, is in and of itself a great benefit. I mean, you're all smart people interested in identity technology and identity problems or solving identity problems, or you wouldn't be on this call. The Kantara Initiative is filled with just those kinds of people who are eager to foster the dialogue and to advance the solutions. This is a collaborative environment. We keep saying that over and over and over again, and Trent and I are doing our level best to make sure that both of our respective houses, the Leadership Council and the Board of Trustees, are working in harmony and collaboration with one another, and we are very much open to feedback and guidance if folks would like to see, you know, further initiatives, further, you know, efforts in that direction. We're both very open to the feedback. The structure allows a diversity. I have frankly personally been a little bit surprised by the number of initiatives that are spinning up. I thought we would have, you know, for sure half a dozen, 10 within the first month or so. We've got over 20, and just last night I received an email from another initiative that wasn't even on our list saying, hey, we want to get involved with Kantara. We think that that's the place where we want to carry our work forward. So we're very encouraged by the enthusiastic reception that we've received. We believe that we're on the right track here. We want to create a painless process that allows people to get this work done easily. And frankly, retain the trademark, retain the good publicity that others have established. I think that, for instance, the Concordia Project has great presence in the market already, and it is recognized as a venue where discussions take place for use cases to be developed. We wouldn't want to lose that, so we're looking for ways, and we're consciously adopting ways of co-branding so that Concordia still is a dominant or a visible mark, I should say, as we bring these to market. So, you know, here is the blatant plea for involvement. You know, get involved. If you're interested in what we're doing, if you think it's got the germ of an idea, or if you've got a germ of an idea that you would like to see fostered in the market, get involved. The websites are listed here. The first is easy, KantaraInitiative.org. Go to the website, check out the groups that are being formed, see if the charters that are posted there make sense, if there's something that you're interested in. If you have any questions at all, you're free to contact Brett, Trent, or myself, and we're more than happy to provide you some guidance and lead you in the path that gets the solutions that you want. So with that, I'd like to open it up to Q&A, and I think I see some Q&A that are in the boxes here. What is the type of legal entity Kantara has? Kantara was formed as a project under the IEEE ISTO. So it is a nonprofit organization, organized underneath the umbrella of the IEEE ISTO as the secretariat. And that was done deliberately to avoid a lot of expenses that have to go into establishing one's own nonprofit status as an organization. Brett, do you want to add any color to that one?
Just that if someone was really asking a very specific question, that's 501c6, U.S. Corporation.
Yeah, 501c6.
Correct.
Right, it was breaking up just a little bit. Any other questions now that we've got people coming off of mute? Uh, will participant in groups need to sign an IPR agreement? We didn't, yes. The short answer is yes. We didn't dwell on that. But there are currently three IPR policies that are approved for use within the Kantara initiative. The first of which is the so-called Liberty version. And that was done so that the work of the Liberty Alliance can be transferred into the various work groups. So Liberty is one of the options. The second option is Apache 2.0, and that is specifically for the open source initiative. We expect that the Open Liberty Project, which is an open source project, is going to transfer over as well. And the Apache 2.0 license IPR policy will be used for that. And then finally, just a couple of weeks ago, we approved the Creative Commons 3.0 IPR regime or IPR policy for use within work groups and discussion groups as appropriate. An important point is that you only have to sign up for the IPR in the group or as it pertains to the group in which you're actively participating. So if there are 20 groups working on 20 different initiatives, you only have to commit to the one where you are actually involved. Question, will today's slides be posted on the SlideShare portion of the website? And the answer to that is yes, I believe, Dervla, yes? The answer is yes. We'll make sure that that happens. And then the there is a question regarding the costs, what it costs to become a member, and is that information, Brett, because there's been so many moving parts here, is that information on the website, the member fees?
Yes, it is, and I think it is an extra slide in this deck if I flip to it.
There it is. There you go. Okay. So there are the membership fees. So as a participant, as an individual participant, as we've said, you know, once, we've said it 50 times, you don't have to pay anything to be a participant. So you can work for a non-member company and participate in one of these work groups. You do have to acknowledge, back to the IPR question a moment ago, you do have to acknowledge that you are authorized to commit the IPR for that particular group, but you don't have to pay anything. If you want to be a member, the levels are the L1, 2, 3, 4 across the top are pertaining to the size of your company. So the membership fee ranges from $100 to $15,000. And the trustees as well range, according to the size of your company, from $15,000 to $50,000. The nonprofit is the last column. There's another question. Are collaborative efforts performed via portal, wiki, et cetera? The initiative does its work in primarily two ways, one through conference calls, and the second of which is through written dialogue, which is posted on the wikis. So you would see and the third way is email. So you would see email, documents that are being produced by the work groups posted onto the appropriate wiki for that group. The bylaws of Kantara with respect to, you know, openness and confidentiality, we've bent over backwards to ensure that virtually everything we do is accessible via the website. We've made some specific exclusions where best business practices have to prevail. So, for instance, if a company is going through an audit process, either for the assurance program or an interoperability test for the interoperability program, the company's privacy needs to be protected in the case that they didn't do too well in that test. You wouldn't want that to be publicized. You'd want to give them an opportunity to remediate any problems that they had. So in that kind of business, you know, legitimate business case, confidentiality would be maintained. The other case is on personnel issues. We have, you know, staff members who are employed by Kantara Initiative, and those staff members need to be treated and respected confidentially. But virtually everything else is out in the open, dialogue and so on. So three main ways, conference calls, email, and written postings on the wiki site.
And Roger, I just want to jump in and add that we will invest some energy and coordination to pull all the Kantara initiatives together in one place for a physical face-to-face meeting, probably twice a year, moving around the globe appropriately. So it's not a main avenue of collaboration, but it's part of the picture. And individual work groups may be gathering more often on their own.
Yeah, and the first of those will be at the DIDW conference later this year. And we're just in the process of making those arrangements and finalizing the logistics for that now. But for the sake of planning ahead, that's where the first face-to-face of the entire group is planned to take place. So there's a question here, will Liberty Alliance continue as a separate entity? Liberty Alliance has put a tremendous amount of energy and resources into this initiative. We intend to walk the talk. That is, we intend to make this initiative as successful as possible. And I'm speaking now with my chair of the Liberty Board hat on. We want this to be successful. We're doing everything in our power to make it be successful, and we're operating on the assumption that this will be successful, and as time goes by, there may or probably will not be a reason for Liberty to exist as a separate organization. Liberty itself currently has a tremendous amount of work product that it has already produced. We need to make sure that that work product is protected for our members, that it can live on, that it can be sustained and maintained as time goes by. Liberty has financial assets that we need to make sure are well taken care of to the benefit of our members. And so I think that's as clear as I can answer the question right now. So over time, we would expect that all the wood is going to be behind the Kantara arrow, and there would be less of an obvious need for Liberty to exist over time. But in the meantime, there is work that continues to exist within Liberty. We expect that most of that, if not all of that work, is going to be transitioned to Kantara. So the obvious conclusion would be that Kantara would be the focus of our members' activities. Other questions allowed in the chat?
I see another one in the chat window, Roger. Can non-member organizations contribute to Kantara to support specific work groups? So I guess this is not a question of whether or not they could join a work group. We've answered that. But I think this is a suggestion that maybe some organization may not want to join and pay a membership fee, but they may want to be a financial contributor to a work group. The person who asked the question could clarify. Is that the question?
Yeah, basically, I think.
Okay.
So
they may want to join and contribute specifically to a work group.
Yeah, we had that was a very lively topic of conversation during the formative. That exact point. That is, I want to join and have either a portion of my membership dues allocated to a specific group, or I want to join and in addition to that, I want to allocate some additional funds to a work group that I'm involved in. It got to be an extremely complex issue. And not that we don't want to do it, we simply deferred the decision until after the organization was funded or up off the ground. So there is an interest in continuing that dialogue. I can't answer you today and say that we've got a solution in place, but there was a lot of interest in doing that during the formative stages. But it, I mean, not the least of which, it became a financial nightmare to try to track that allocated money and keep it in separate buckets, not to bore you with the finances of it, but if, you know, a member says that this can only be used for project, you know, ABC, then in perpetuity, you've got to allocate that money for project ABC in perpetuity, and you've got to account for every dollar. And that was a little bit of a bridge too far, a cantara too far for the stage that we were at. But there is interest in doing that, and frankly, there are examples of doing that. For instance, at the RSA conference and at the DIDW conference, we provide sponsorship opportunities for individual members to present, to have a, you know, kind of a spotlight shone on them during workshops, and that costs money to do that. So it's a member benefit, but it's slightly tangential to what you were asking. So there is interest in doing it. We haven't got there yet. Any other questions?
Yeah, I see about four more. So next question I see is, if a company is listed on, as a member, what level are they? And for example, the Information Card Foundation. If you go to the website, cantarainitiative.org, and you go into the membership section, look for the roster, the link to rosters, and then the membership's all broken down. So you actually see how where everyone sits. But to answer the quick question, Information Card Foundations are members of Cantara Initiative.
Yeah, and we sort of did that, I mean, in full disclosure, as Brett said, we make the information available. But what we were trying to do is present the organization and make a conscious decision to present the organization and its members as flat as possible without making it appear that larger companies are somehow dominating the membership or dominating the, you know, the publicity. So we were very conscious about not doing that. Do we have an expectation for timelines to conclude recommendations? There's nothing hard-coded that says, you know, once you spin up a work group, you have to get it done within 12 months. But we would expect that members work with all due speed to get something done. If a project is sort of languishing with no activity for 2, 3, 4 months, then I would expect, and maybe Trent would want to comment on this, I don't want to speak for the Leadership Council, but I would expect that the Leadership Council is going to start asking questions like, you know, what's going on with you guys? You know, are you just occupying space, or are you actually trying to get something done here? Do you need more time? Are you not getting the volunteers that you need to get the work done? So there's not a hard and fast rule, but folks are expected to work with all due speed to get something done, if it truly is a worthwhile project. Trent, do you want to comment on that?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. And we're definitely cognizant of the need to understand the timelines and the milestoning. And so as part of the chartering process for work groups, we do request that any group identify the output that they anticipate developing along with a proposed milestone schedule and potential delivery date. Now, we've had a lot of discussions back and forth in the Leadership Council as we've gone through the charters, because it is very difficult to identify dates when you're just spinning something up. But what we do use them for is kind of a gauge for, you know, is this a year, is this 5 years, you know, are there deliverables every 6 months, and we just kind of use that as a gauge. And then what we're doing in the Leadership Council is putting push pins in the calendar to basically make sure that we circle back in and around those dates to just see how it's going and reassess at that point. But yeah, dates are very important to making sure that you know, we're measuring our progress, we are moving forward, and we're also decommissioning languishing work or otherwise trying to facilitate how to get them to be healthier.
Thanks, Trent. So we're nearing the top of the hour, and if there are other questions that occur to you, I would encourage you please to go to the community at cantarainitiative.org mail list and submit your questions to the community list. And we promise you that somebody's going to respond to you. But in the spirit, you know, of openness and transparency, that's where the communication takes place. If you have a particular issue that is related to your company, you know, and for some reason you need to take it offline, we can do that. But we always start with the community at KinteraInitiative.org list and start the dialogue there. So we thank you very, very much for participating today, for listening to what we have to say, for your interest in showing up and listening for an hour to the webcast here. And we would very much encourage you to get involved. Get on the initiative community mail list. So subscribe to the list. Anybody can do it. That does not require an IP commitment because you are simply observing what is transpiring.